of us, a battle must be fought. So working people, use your power, the key to liberty. Don't support that rich man style of luxury.
And there ain't no way they can ever keep us down, oh no. Ain't no way they can ever keep us down.
We won't be bought, we won't be sold, to be treated right, well that's our goal.
And there ain't no way they can ever keep us down.
Shot, we've been jailed, Lord, it's a sin. Women and little children stood right by the men. But we got a union contract that keeps the worker free, and I'll never shoot that union out of me.
They'll never shoot that union out of me, oh no. Never shoot that union out of me.
Got a contract in our hand signed by the blood of honest men,
and they'll never shoot that.
That was Hazel Dickens from the West Virginia Coal Miners Struggle, reminding us that you can't keep the people down. This is Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice, and it's April 9th. Welcome to Here We Stand. You can't keep the people down because we keep rising up from defeat and death. That's right, even from death, because those of us who are cut down in a righteous struggle keep carrying on that fight until it's won. Fallen and risen fighters like Jesus himself, and William Coombs, and Harriet Mahaney, and all the ones whose courage and spirit strive on in us, in our willingness to directly confront enthroned and institutionalized evil like they did, without stopping and without counting the cost. Well, that's especially important to remember on this Resurrection Day of Easter, as we approach the anniversary of our first Aboriginal Holocaust Remembrance Day, next Saturday, April 15th, because on that day, 18 years ago in Vancouver, a handful of us began the church protests and occupations that over years forced out the truth of genocide in Canada and eventually prosecuted those responsible, launching a global common law revolution. And so we'll be picking up that banner again next weekend, not only in Canada, but all over the world, and we'll be launching a new wave of direct actions to stop the ongoing crimes against children and against all of us. Well, we're here today, as always, to reclaim the revolutionary meaning of Easter as part of our global resistance movement called the Republic Alliance, free men and women who are dismantling the corporate police state and establishing sovereign common law republics of equality and liberty. You can read more about that, republicofkanata.org, K-A-N-A-T-A, and for you folks who don't know, that Kanata means where the people sit as one around the council fire. That's an Algonquin word. We're going to do that today to prepare you and all of us for upcoming spring and summer campaigns. And we got to do that by remembering that knowledge is power. We have to know our enemy to combat it on our terms. And so it's fitting that today on Easter, we remember that we face the oldest enemy, really, the oldest corporation on the planet, the bloodiest one, and the biggest lie in history, a thing that calls itself the Roman Catholic Church and its holding company, the Vatican Incorporated. That's the Roman entity that killed Jesus the revolutionary by turning him into a dead icon to enslave and destroy mankind, And it's the same evil that led the mass murder of millions of Indigenous people and over 60,000 children across Canada. It also stands lawfully convicted and disestablished as a genocidal power. It's the same power that continues to kill our people in league with its partner China. Like last fall, what happened in Saskatchewan, where 10 Cree people were murdered because they opposed the mining of their land by Rio Tinto Mining Company that's partly owned by England, by the Vatican, and China. In other words, folks, the genocide's continuing, and it's now becoming omnicide, which means the death of all of us. It's one of the prices we pay for not having fought back when it was striking our Native brothers and sisters. Now it's striking all of us. You could call it blowback and payback, but it gives us a chance now in history to change and to get on the right side of history, finally. So today we're going to be arming you with more of the knowledge you and others will need to be that change and to enforce those lawful convictions of the Vatican by occupying and reclaiming its churches and properties as we're obligated to do and empowered under law, the moral law, and the law of man together. We have the right to seize its wealth and the land it has stolen from Indigenous people all over the world. And those actions have already begun through our Republic Alliance network in Australia, Italy, Scandinavia, France, Ireland, England, America, and Canada. So I urge you to do necessary background homework for that. If you're new listeners to the show, go to murderbydecree.com. All the evidence is there. And a lot of the books that I've written, 23 now, actually, including the latest one I should probably plug, which is called The Unauthorized English-Canadian Dictionary. And it's got kind of a comical and unorthodox but genuine interpretation of Canadian history to pull back the mask of all these, quote, nice Canadians who are sitting on mass murder. So you can get that, like all my books, at Amazon or by writing to me directly, angelfire101 at protonmail.com. But also remember that we're going to be going in live and online training workshops over the next few weeks. We're going to be conducting them to prepare people for these actions, how to reclaim not only these properties and wealth from these murderous churches, but also the other genocidal forces operating in our communities. You can get involved in that campaign. Write to us, Republic National Council at protonmail.com. Well, along the way on this journey, in case you're feeling kind of overwhelmed, as is normal in these times, there's a lot actually to uplift and inspire us and make us really laugh at the absurdity of our enemy. Yesterday, I spoke with our brave sister, Georgina Cameron, in Australia. Now, she's a 65-year-old semi-disabled woman who we've talked about on the show and who we hope to have on soon. She single-handedly confronted the Catholic Church in Wollongong, in Canberra, in Sydney. She goes out, sets up her displays, showing all of the evidence of genocide and the policy in the Catholic Church allowing and encouraging to cover up these crimes. She goes there with her bullhorn and her placards and with a fiery love and courage missing in a lot of people. Well, this last week, she once again entered Lumen Christi Catholic Church in Wollongong, where she had been assaulted already. If you can imagine a 65-year-old woman being assaulted by these church goons. But nevertheless, she faced her fear, went back to that place, and she got up to read out the order issued by Native elders all over the world and our International Common Law Court of Justice that banishes the Roman Catholic Church from our territories and reclaims its properties. But before she did that, and here's the funny part, before that, she noticed something in the pews, a little notice that said that the prayers people make have to be paid for first. That's right, folks. If anyone wanted to have a prayer said for them, they had to first hand over their credit card information and enter it online. I kid you not. To pray, to have a prayer said for you or anyone, you got to fork over the money first. So I think maybe the Catholic Church should adopt a new model or motto. First you pay, then you pray. That's the Roman Catholic way. Kind of catchy, you know, and accurate. But it's such a brief summary of the sick and really comical corruption that exposes this beast. I mean, how do people fall for this garbage? Do they really believe heaven operates like a big bank? I guess so. So in that humorous vein, I'm sure you're going to enjoy our midpoint offerings today that we're going to play for you in a few minutes. Tim Minchin and me singing and talking about the thing behind the Roman mask and how easy is it it is to see now and to assign that thing to the garbage can of history. But getting back to Georgina for a minute, it only takes one person of pure heart and intent to count coup against the oldest evil on our planet. But when I was talking to Georgina, she confided in me that she was quite afraid as she approached the church because, like the native folks and William, she had suffered at the hands of that church. And when she walked towards it, she felt the same fear testing her, making her want to get back in the car and drive away. But she demonstrated the true measure of valor, which is not that you're lacking fear, but that you have a willingness to face it anyway, to fight through it and master it. And that's what she did. And that to me is an example of the bigger purpose of what we're doing. Our battle is really a way to sift and refine those among us and prepare them for even greater tasks. Those of us who have been set aside to do that work and those of you who can be inspired to be part of our movement and our ranks in doing that. Because our fight is really happening at three levels. It's a personal, a political, and a spiritual battle, really for the soul of the human race. And I've seen the signs of that greater power at work, that spiritual force. Like, as I've mentioned before, the exorcism I conducted in Rome, October 11th, 2009, right outside the Vatican. Next day, the tornado hits the center of Rome, and the Vatican starts admitting for the first time of these crimes of against children. The eagle that always appeared in Vancouver whenever we held a church action overhead would be marching down the street and the eagle would be soaring over us. The day we occupied the church in March 2008 that really began to force the so-called bogus apology out of Canada for these crimes of genocide against children. The police and the Knights of Columbus had stepped back. They weren't there that day. The church door was standing wide open and we went in. And William Coombs was over, like Georgina, was able to overcome that fear and took part in that occupation. All of these miracles on the ground, these are things that prove that there's a greater force at work behind what we're doing. We just need the courage to step forward and act. And that's what I think is most lacking today. It isn't the knowledge. It isn't the even willingness by people to take these actions. What I see lacking is a spirit and the courage to have a visceral abhorrence about these crimes. I don't see that a lot in people. It's all very much in the head still. We have to be so disgusted at these abominations that we can't do anything but act. That quality can't be taught. It can only be sparked in others by our examples, by the examples of people like Georgina and our fallen and risen brothers and sisters. And I hope you find that within yourself in this whole struggle. And in that light, I just wanted to share something else that I'm, like I say, we're going to do this midpoint break where we listen to not only this hysterically funny song by Tim Minchin, but a talk I gave that was to be, but it got canceled at Oxford University, going into the details of the real nature of the Vatican, what we face, pulling back the mask of lies about this so-called church. And what I recognized in doing this work early on, like over 25 years ago now, is that a lot of the people who are willing to take part in these direct actions were very often poor and homeless. They didn't have a lot to lose, but it was more than that. They had been through it. They had suffered at its hands. And so they had that determination coming from the fact that they had tasted what it meant to suffer at its hands. It wasn't just an abstract idea. And so I really urge people to kind of reach down inside themselves and find that abhorrence, that disgust, the awareness that children were taken out and slaughtered en masse. Just read murderbydecree.com and the horrible things done to children and are still being done. The trafficking, the sterilization programs. You know, William describes seeing a child buried alive by Brother Murphy, literally thrown in the ground and had the dirt thrown on top of him at Kamloops death camp that they call a residential school in October 1964, just before the so-called Queen of England showed up and took 10 of those children away. And William paid the ultimate price for talking about that, and yet he lives on with us today. So in part two of the show after this break, we're going to go into the details, the practicalities of what begins on April 15th and how you can be part of that. And again, I urge you to do the background research, murderbydecree.com, write to us, Republic National Council, at protonmail.com. But now, Tim Minchin and I will be speaking to you for about 20 minutes, and we'll be back after that.
Thank you. All right, this is the last thing you're going to hear tonight. It's a happy song, but it's got this complicated words, so just listen really hard. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a fucking motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a total motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck him, fuck the motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucking Pope. Fuck the motherfucker and fuck you, motherfucker, if you think that motherfucker is sacred. If you cover for another motherfucker who's a kiddie fucker, fuck you, you're no better than the motherfucking rapist. And if you don't like the swearing this motherfucker forced from me and reckon it shows moral or intellectual paucity, then fuck you, motherfucker. This is language one employs when one is fucking pissed at motherfuckers fucking boys. I don't give a fuck if calling the Pope a motherfucker means you unthinkingly brand me an unthinking apostate. This has now to do with other fucking godly motherfuckers. I'm not interested right now in theological debate. There are other fucking songs and there are other fucking ways. I'll be a religious apologist on other fucking days, but the fact remains, if you protect a single kitty fucker, then Pope or Prince or Plumber, you're a fucking motherfucker. And I don't give a fuck what any other motherfucker believes about Jesus and his motherfucking mother. I've no problem with the spiritual beliefs of other fuckers, while those beliefs don't impact on the happiness of others. But if you build a church on claims of fucking moral authority, and with threats of hell impose it on others in society, then you motherfucker can expect some fucking wrath. But it turns out you've been fucking us in our motherfucking asses. So fuck the motherfucker and fuck you, motherfucker, if you're still a motherfucking papist. If he covered for a single motherfucker who's a kiddie fucker, fuck him, he's as evil as the motherfucking rapist. And if you look into your motherfucking heart and tell me true, if this motherfucking stupid fucking song offended you with its filthy fucking language and its fucking disrespect, if it made you feel angry, go ahead and write a letter. But if you find me more offensive than the possibility the Pope protected priests when they were getting fucking fiddly, then listen to me, motherfucker, this here is a fact. You are just as morally misguided as that motherfucking power-hungry, self-aggrandized bigot in the stupid fucking hat. Thank you very much.
Good evening, I'm Kevin Annett, and tonight I'm going to give you a lecture that I was to present to the Oxford Union, which is the oldest debating society in the world. In April 2016, I was invited to come there in Oxford University in England and debate a cleric of the Catholic Church over the issue. Funnily enough, the topic was, is there any good in the Roman Catholic Church? Well, as so often happens on these occasions, the invitation to me was unexplainably withdrawn about 2 weeks before the event, and the debate between me and him never happened. So I thought it would be good to post online for the world to see exactly what I was going to say that night. Good evening. Let me begin by saying what a pleasant surprise it is to be able to join you all here tonight. The last time I tried to give a public talk in England, at a London rally to protest child trafficking by church and state, your privately run UK border agency saw fit to arrest, fingerprint, jail me, and then finally deport me from your country without giving a reason at all. So be that as it may, and it usually is, I especially want to thank you for having me here tonight, having the courage to have me here tonight. Tonight's topic for debate is framed rather tellingly. Is there any good in the Roman Catholic Church? And assumedly by that is meant its holding company, the Vatican Incorporated. Well, the very wording of the subject's interesting because it implies that no, there isn't any good at all. Let's search for some. Of course, trying to locate integrity in a corporation is like looking for love in a brothel. So perhaps the question of tonight's debate's already been answered. My job's done, we can all go home. In any event, the title of the main event tonight is a bit confusing, beginning with the term good, which is, after all, a completely relative and morally ambiguous term. The Spanish conquistadors and their slaughter-blessing Catholic priests thought that they were doing good when they wiped out millions of non-Catholic people for their own good. The Vatican's Inquisition that barbecued and tortured to death Christians who disagreed with Rome was officially entitled an auto de fe, which means act of faith. Even the present so-called liberal Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, speaks of the goodness and zeal of the Franciscan missionaries who worked to death thousands of Aboriginal men, women, and children on Catholic slave plantations in California. Well, some things never change. Bergoglio also recently pardoned some 10,000 of his own child-raping priests, no doubt in the same spirit of doing good, at least good for his own institution. Human beings, especially when goaded on and justified by religion, always adorn their crimes in a halo of goodness. I've had personal experience of what I speak about. For over 20 years in Canada, I've lived and worked and documented alongside these folks who have lived through this story, the reality of genocide in Canada, perpetrated mostly by Catholic-run Indian residential schools, where over 60,000 children died. Half of these children never came back because at the hands of the priests and nuns, they were ritually tortured, routinely starved, trafficked, experimented upon, flogged, gang-raped, and killed en masse with smallpox and tuberculosis. Not one Catholic priest has ever gone to trial for any of these crimes, nor will they. These killers are above the law as it stands now, and having had the misfortune of speaking with enough of these scum, I know that these complicit clergy are still convinced that they were only trying to do good to the little brown savages by killing their bodies to save their souls, to quote their buddy Thomas Aquinas, one of the founding theologians of the Catholic Church. So perhaps what we need to do is redefine the term good in a better way, using this simple definition. To do good means to do no harm to others and to let them be themselves. Of course, under that definition, you immediately disqualify and condemn the Roman Catholic Church, which has killed more people than any institution in human history. The Church of Rome's body count is well over 50 million corpses, ever since it was made a legal corporation by the Emperor Constantine in the year 317. All right, that may all be true, sputter the defenders of Rome. So nobody's perfect. But look at all the charitable works the church does all the time. Isn't that good? Well, in that sense, perhaps tonight's topic for debate should have been entitled instead, Was There Any Good in Pablo Escobar, the head of the criminal syndicate known as the Medellin Drug Cartel? Because Pablo engaged in lots of charitable good works for the poor folks of Colombia. Just like the Roman Catholic Church, of which he was a dues-paying member, Pablo used his ill-gotten loot to build shelters for the homeless, playgrounds for some slum kids, and soup kitchens for the hungry. Of course, that charitable money was covered in blood and paid for by the early deaths from drug addiction of the very same people he was helping, but still, he was doing some good, wasn't he? Now, my analogy between Pablo Escobar and the Vatican is more than fitting, since not only are they members of the same club, but also the Vatican Bank is heavily invested in the international drug cartels, as well as the arms and human trafficking industries that go along with it. GMO companies, Big Pharma, the biggest small arms company in the world, Beretta Limited, even dozens of online internet porn companies, all of these 100% Vatican investments pay for the goodies doled out to those deserving poor people who kiss the claw that feeds them. But let's take on directly the suggestion that the Roman Catholic Church, as the world's richest and least accountable corporation, plays a major role in providing charitable sustenance to the world's needy. Let's ask, what percentage of the Church's annual revenue actually goes towards charitable works? Well, it's an important question, not only for the debate tonight, but because the only legal basis for the Church to be exempt from paying taxes under the Law of Nations is that they must devote all, not some, but all, of their collected revenue for either the advancement of religion or charitable works. Well, right there, you cannot go to the Roman Catholic Church unless someone wants to explain what money laundering for the mafia, buying cruise missiles for third world dictators, or issuing routine bribes to politicians and governments all over the world have to do with either religion or charity. What percentage of the Catholic Church's revenue goes towards charity? Actually, less than 1%. At least in America. For tellingly, that's the only country in the world where the church consistently publishes any of its financial records. After all, the Vatican is a closed, self-governing, totally unaccountable body, like any secret criminal society. But that inconvenient, lingering notion of a separation of church and state found in the American Constitution requires that even the Catholic Church has to create an appearance of transparency. And so according to the U.S. government, in the year 2013, the Roman Catholic Church in America had a net revenue of $13.4 billion. And that's just in one country, where only about 15% of the world's Catholics live. By projection, the annual income of the Vatican must be in the hundreds of billions of dollars, not just from all those collection plates from those saps, but also from its massive global investment portfolio and its secret financial concordat agreements with over 100 governments that channel a regular percentage of your tax money into the Vatican Bank and all of its criminal behavior. But coming back to America, the one country where a light is shone on the murky underworld of Vatican finances, according to the same self-audit of the Catholic Church, of the $13.4 billion raked in during 2013, only 1.1% of it went to charity. But since half of that amount came from government grants to Catholic aid societies, in reality, a whopping 0.6% of the income went from the bank accounts into charities. But since those charities are mostly owned and operated by the church itself, it just means that one hand of the octopus is feeding the other. Quite brilliant, don't you think? One half of 1%, friends. The truth is that the Roman Catholic Church is not a force for charitable works. Just look at the books. It's in fact a huge criminal racket, a money-sucking corporation that kept afloat by every taxpayer in the world. Okay, so let's turn to the other basis for the church not paying a dime of taxes, the advancement of religion. What percentage of its time and money goes towards advancing its particular, and I might say extremely violent, religious creed? Less than 10%. That's the time each week a priest spends conducting prayers, masses, or catechism classes, according to the church itself, according to a statement from the Vatican's Governing College of Cardinals, who in 2014 issued an internal report concerning the training and ordination of its priests. The main job of the clergy, according to the cardinals, is the material and social upkeep of the church, guarding the building, the safeguard of its traditions and operations, and the expansion of its income and membership. Like in any big corporation, somebody somewhere tell me where God, let alone Jesus Christ, enters into that whole mess. Okay, strike two. In case you didn't know, that's a baseball term. I don't play cricket. The third and final strike against the Roman Catholic Church, and you got to watch out for that term because the word Catholic means universal, which it is not. The final strike against the Catholic Church lies in its real and not imagined nature. Once its enormous pretense and lie is pulled back and we see it for what it is historically and today. But to do so and to pierce the mental fog surrounding the Vatican Incorporated, we have to realize that the papacy is not a Christian church at all. On the contrary, it is in every respect a cult of emperor worship derived from late 3rd century Rome, not from the historic Jesus, not even from the early Christian church. This fact is crucial if we're to deal with the mental confusion of many people, atheists included, who ponder helplessly, but how can a body that preaches about the love of Jesus cause mass murder, genocide, and institutionalized child rape? Of course, the simple answer to that is that it's always the worst child rapist in town who has the most sterling reputation. The latter is needed as a cloak by any crook. The bigger the felony, the sweeter the coating. Talk, my friends, is easy, especially from a pulpit. But let's not forget what Jesus himself warned, quote, many false prophets will come in my name and say, I am the Christ. But do not be fooled. By their works, you shall know them. Bingo. By their works, you shall know them. Well, we can see the works of the papacy all too well. Conquest, brutality, just wars, genocide, inquisition, and the crushing of the human spirit. And it all began when the Roman emperors Aurelian and Constantine created the Roman Catholic Church on the murdered bones of the early Christian church. The church was an extension and continuation of that other big killing machine called the Roman Empire. Proof of this, you don't have to look any further than the Pope's official title, which is Pontifex Maximus, which in Latin means the great bridge between, guess where, heaven and earth. That was the Latin title of the emperors of Rome, starting with Aurelian in the year 275, who also assumed the title Deus et Dominus, means God and Master. One man who's become God. Well, first that was the emperor, but now today to a Catholic, it's the Pope. Christ is no longer the link to God, but a man is, elected and elevated blasphemously over humanity, even over God, by other old men in funny hats. Well, not surprisingly, every newly elected pope is also given the title Vicari Christi, which is even more blatant. In Latin, it means the replacement of Christ, the one who replaces Christ. In black and white, it's right there. Catholicism, papism, is the replacement of Christianity. An empire of conquest and wealth relying on the means of the world and not the way of Christ. Just look at the body count. And listen to these admissions of guilt right from the horse's mouth, or I should say ass. Statements from various popes down the centuries that have never been contradicted or repudiated by any of their successors. Pope Boniface in 1302. We declare it is necessary for every human creature to be subject to the Roman pontiff. Pope Leo in 1520. The Pope is Christ himself on earth. Pope Pius in 1929. Fascism is simply the doctrines of our faith made the law in government. Pope John in 1962. No man may enter into Christ unless he be led there by the sovereign pontiff. Pope John Paul in 1996. Have no fear when men call me Christ on earth, for I am he. Pope Benedict in 2008. You need not go to Christ for salvation. Come to me. Pope Francis in 2016. Christ made himself sin, made himself the devil. That's new. For our salvation. Only the church and its magisterium can claim holy infallibility. Have you had enough? I know I have. Well, is it any wonder that such a power-obsessed, megalomaniac religion makes itself unaccountable, sees nothing with its crimes, and uses the image and words of Christ himself to delude and soak its millions of dupe followers to believe that a bit of a communion wafer or a papal blessing or the right amount of cash delivered into church coffers will buy their way into heaven, as if one can? Well, unfortunately, I saw it for myself when I was last in Rome in 2011. Right there in the Vatican Museum, a display board for buying indulgences, just like out of Martin Luther's day. Special papal blessings cost you only 150 euros. The more you spend, the closer you get to heaven. Although be warned, apparently, according to the sign, apparently God prefers credit cards to cash. How right when Pope Leo in 1520 said, "This myth of Christ has served us well." Well, the most dangerous group in the world is a super wealthy cult that sees itself as God, superior to everyone, and therefore justified in doing whatever is needed to protect itself and rule the world. A cult, in other words, like the Church of Rome. What other being than a cult can operate according to a criminal policy like Crimen Solicitanus, which has been binding on all Catholics since the year 1929? That policy states that whenever a child is raped or otherwise harmed by a priest, the police are not to be told, the victim is to be silenced, and if anyone speaks of this, they are excommunicated, thrown into hell for snitching on a rapist. Clearly, the God of Rome, like the Mafia, cannot tolerate a snitch. Better instead to operate under a global criminal conspiracy to aid and abet child rapists and killers than to cost the church a lawsuit or save a child's life. Heaven forbid. And yet, despite all of this criminal arrangement, the world keeps wondering why there's so much child rape within the Church of Rome. Are we all that blind? Do we really think a lion isn't going to eat a gazelle? Well, John Acton, a British politician, said, "Absolute power corrupts absolutely." He was referring to the Church of Rome when he made that statement, something conveniently left out of the history books. The Church of Rome is absolutely corrupt, but it also corrupts whoever is near to it, like all who attend it, who fund it, who associate with it, or rent its halls, or smile on its policies, or look the other way at all its public relations gestures. All who do so partake in that corruption. And under the law of God and mankind, those human accessories are equally guilty of all its crimes. The only good that can be said to come out of this most violent, corrupt, and anti-Christ body in history is how its evil awakens people to the need for a return to the simple words, witness, and spirit of Jesus himself, a spirit that has always been the chief adversary of the Church of Rome. Jesus founded a community of called out people, a remnant not of this world, a congregation, not a church. Nowhere did Jesus speak of popes, of bishops, of rituals and ceremonies by which someone would mediate him and God to others. He said that the kingdom of heaven lay inside each of us, not outside in a communion wafer or a religious ritual. That inner kingdom of Christ alone is the guide of all true Christians, who must come out from and be separate from all these vile, false and violent churches that deny God in practice and kill children in practice. And that's the task of any deluded soul still caught in the fatal grip of Rome and its blasphemous illusions and depravities. As America's founding father said, we hold this truth to be self-evident. And one of those men, the second U.S. president, John Adams, said, quote, "A free government and the Roman Catholic religion can never exist together in any nation or country. Liberty and popery are opposed," unquote. The nature of an ancient corporate evil like the Church of Rome does not change over time. It simply alters its appearance because it comes out of the dark ruler of this world, the one whom Jesus said, "He is a lie from the beginning, for he is the father of lies," Satan. It's a good thing to free ourselves from a lie as huge as Roman Catholicism and as criminal. As freeborn men and women, we are made for the truth, and when we recognize it, our hearts and our minds breathe freely and we return to our natural sense of liberty and independence. From that place of freedom, we are empowered to take action to stop criminals in every high place, whether they be popes or presidents or prime ministers. For we, the people, are the source of all sovereignty, of government, of law, and of religion. We can and must stop and arrest and confine child-raping priests when the police and courts refuse to do so. We can and must shut down the churches that traffic children and have hidden their crimes over centuries, like the Catholic Church, the Anglican Church of England, the United Church of Canada, all of these criminal bodies. For the life of one child is more sacred than all the fanfare and rituals of any church anywhere. Well, Jesus had his own prescription for child killers. He said, "Whoever would harm one of these innocent ones should have a millstone placed around his neck and be thrown into the sea." Well, I wonder what Jesus would say about an entire institution that mocks God, murders with impunity, rapes and murders children, and protects those who do so. Is there a millstone that is big enough to sink such an institution? Yes, there is. It is we, the people. I thank you.
And we're back. That talk I gave was actually supposed to happen at Oxford University, Oxford Debating Society, right? And it was funny because this always happens about 2 weeks before. This is back in 2016. About 2 weeks before the event, I was told that I couldn't attend. They didn't even say it was canceled. They just said, "I can't attend it." They didn't give any explanation why one of the two speakers there, I was to debate one of the, I think it was one of the local Jesuit representatives in London. But anyway, they just said, "Nope, can't do it." That's in so common. I mean, I've been through that so many times. It's not even the question of me, but this truth that they just can't bring out because the emperor is so naked that they've got to have everyone's cooperation in pretending he's clothed and not got blood all over him. So one of the things when I mentioned on that and earlier in the show, part of the campaign over the next few months, it's already started, was actually begun by the city council in I think I can pronounce this right, the Iqaluit, which is the capital of Nunavut in northern part of Canada, an Inuit community in northern Canada. And they actually passed a motion just before Bergoglio, aka Pope Francis, showed up last summer, and that was to nullify all privileges and tax exemptions for the Catholic Church in their area. So they had to start paying taxes. Now, other town councils picked that up. And what's interesting is when it was tried in other places in Canada, the Catholic Church moved in really quick and basically brought a lot of money pressure to bear and nipped a lot of it in the bud. But it spread outside Canada, of course. It's been happening. One of the places that it's also underway, Georgina Cameron in Australia, has gone to local town councils and put forward motions saying, because this is a convicted criminal body, because it has a standing policy of protecting child rapists, we are obligated by the law not to give it any kind of privileges or tax exemptions, or we're aiding and abetting a criminal body. And you're also favoring one religion over another, which goes against any democratic principle of separation of church and state. So on that basis, the town council should simply nullify all privileges and tax exemptions, not only for the Catholic Church, but any church that committed these crimes. That would include the Anglicans, the United Church, etc. So we actually have the way of how to go about that. It's posted online under updates at ITCC's updates and murderbydecree.com. You can learn a lot more there about how to do that. But like I say, to be involved in this campaign, we'll be going out to the town councils all over Canada and all over the world and putting forward that motion. And as part of the motion, we're saying to the town council, if you refuse to do this, it'll not only be an issue at the next election when you stand for election as to why you're aiding and abetting a criminal body, which is equivalent to the mafia, but we're going to make it known to the whole community that you're siding with this criminal child-killing church. So they're very vulnerable. Politicians are vulnerable. And like we say in the Art of War, you strike where the enemy is most vulnerable, and that's one of the places. So like I say, to be involved in that, Republic National Council at protonmail.com, part of the defunding the child killers campaign, one aspect of it. Along with the teach-ins, the direct actions, we have an educators campaign where we're getting all this evidence at murderbydecree.com into the schools, into the curriculum, so the next generation can learn about the genocide in their own backyard, so it won't repeat. And that's many faceted aspects. Very exciting work and fun on the ground. You know, when you're out there doing these things, it's amazing the amount of support you find on the street, people just going by. And the only way to do that is to be out there with them, like Georgina's demonstrated. We camp out, as we will be doing, outside these churches, doing street corner teach-ins directly there in front of the scene of the crime. So I really urge you to be involved in this. It's one way to turn the tables, as we've demonstrated. Now, for the rest of the show, two things I'm going to do. We're going to talk near the end of the show about the how to go about it, some of the ideas of taking on a bigger enemy. But one thing I wanted to do as well was mention that one of the spins going on in Canada is they went to the various sites that we had targeted, and one of them was what you know as the Mushhole or the Mohawk School in Brantford, Ontario, south of Toronto. It was the earliest death camp, so-called residential school in Canada, in 1832, set up by the Anglicans and the Catholics, and it was a major experimental center of pain threshold experiments, torture techniques that went on against children. We have the eyewitnesses. We even have people who carried out the bodies from the sub-basement area under the mush hole where the children were killed and then buried in a special cistern out back. If you go to murderbydecree.com, go to the ITCCS archives, and look for the section that says Mass Graves of Children in Canada, Documented Evidence. And then you'll see the hard evidence we came up when we did the dig there, 2011, 2012. We were invited by the Grand River Mohawks to come in there, nine of them. And we have all of that, all of the evidence of being invited in writing to come in and do the dig. We unearthed bones with the help of the elders, Bill and Cheryl Squire. If the bones were analyzed at the gravesite where people like Geronimo Henry buried children. We shipped off some of those bones to the Don Ortner, the chief pathologist at the Smithsonian Institute in Washington. Don Ortner confirmed in January 2012 that, yes, these are the bones of children. He offered to come up and work with us. He dies 2 months later before it could happen, as did Cheryl and Bill Squire in the subsequent years. The only two elders who weren't pressured to drop away were killed off. So in the wake of that, we went out to the Mushhole the next year, and the ground had been dug up. Obviously, the government had been in there removing the remains. And recently, the government announced a big spin. Hey, we're going to investigate ourselves again by going in and looking at the Mushhole. So it's very important you read the truth about that site, because it's going to be at the heart of a lot of the new spin operation. Like what happened in Kamloops, where the Mounties go in, pretend to do a dig, destroy the site like they've always done, of the mass graves there, and then say, hey, we didn't find anything. Like asking the serial killer what happened beneath, who's buried beneath his own house. So that's just to flag that for you folks. If you want hard evidence to counter the spin that's coming, please go to that. That's murderbydecree.com. Go to, on the listings at the top, go to ITCCS archive. And then the part that says Mass Graves of Children in Canada, Documented Evidence. Now, for the next 3 minutes, I want to also say to you folks that this show is more and more, you may have noticed, it's geared more and more to the activists on the ground. The people are cadre, if you like, who are working to actively organize. And that's very different than people who are just kind of passive consumers, that they're just listening and go away and don't do anything. This isn't primarily aimed at them. It's aimed at those people on the ground who are actively organizing. So I want to address those folks in the last 10 or so minutes of the show. And to read from one of our books, probably the most important book we have at this point in history, and that's called Truth Teller's Shield, A Manual for Whistleblowers and Hellraisers. It's got really important lessons for people on the ground, how to deal with and navigate the real situations you find yourself in. Because like I say, we're going to be doing local training, like we're doing right now, local training and organizing for how to do these direct actions at the sites of these criminal activities. And don't forget, these crimes against children have never stopped. In Vancouver, at the Holy Rosary Cathedral, there's a tunnel system that we have identified in the course of the actions. There are insiders in the church, Vancouver police, and others, including the coroner's office, confirmed that there's tunnels running under Holy Rosary Cathedral, going all through downtown Vancouver, linking the other churches, running down Burrard Street, underneath the Vancouver Club, which is the site of major child trafficking and killing that's been going on for many years, that elite Vancouver Club, and then right next to it, the Vancouver Harbor. It's based on a series of old tunnels that existed under the city going back to the late 1800s when the city was built for smuggling in that. Now they continue to traffic human beings there. I remember some of our videos show me down on the Vancouver waterfront outside a place called the Flying Angels, which is the Anglican Church front. It's a supposed mission to seamen, no pun intended there. But it was actually, it's a human trafficking spot, because what happens is the ships come in from overseas, China, Southeast Asia especially, and they have human beings on the fake hulls of these ships, drugs, arms, human beings, children, men, women, slave laborers, and they traffic them through Vancouver out of the port, and the tunnel system is one of the places they're taken. I remember when I was doing street ministry in Vancouver, I used to talk to the homeless people who used to set out in that area around Burrard and Hastings. And one of the guys would say, oh yeah, I hear drumming going on underneath the sidewalk somewhere. I hear chanting and drumming, all sorts of weird things. That's, if you're in Vancouver, go to the Marine Building at the corner of Burrard and Hastings, right across from the Vancouver Club. You'll see the site right under your feet where these crimes are going on. So that's why we take these actions still, not only because of the crimes of the past, but what's going on still today. And like I say, get involved, Republic National Council at protonmail.com. Don't complain about it happening to you tomorrow or today if you didn't do anything to stop it against your neighbor. So that said, I want to just remind folks that if you go to this book, A Manual for Whistleblowers and Hellraisers, it was talked about recently by Owen and I, Owen Lucas from our Republic Alliance group in Ireland. We did a good interview that'll be up soon at our site, murderbydecree.com, under ITCCS updates. And I urge you to go to page 41, which is called Learning the Sniper's Trade, the Advantage of Being Small, Mobile, and Unpredictable. And that's a good way to summarize our church actions. We never really announced beforehand when we were going to show up at these churches. We just showed up, which is a good tactic because all three downtown churches, the Catholic, Anglican, United churches, they've got big cathedrals in downtown Vancouver. They're all so worried because they didn't know when we'd strike next. And so, for example, they were hiring security guards. They were frisking their own parishioners coming in. They were pissing off their own people. We were like the mosquito in the elephant's ear. We're driving them crazy by the threat of what we might do. And that's the advantage of a guerrilla army. You got to rely on that. You don't announce what you're going to do. You don't have a big, predictable protest that does nothing. You strike when they least expect it, and you hit what they love. We went in on Sunday morning. We threatened the collection plates. We threatened the public image, and they buckled. Within 2 weeks of us doing that occupation at the downtown Catholic Cathedral, the government started announcing apologies and truth commissions and things that never happened, directly because we went around their flank and went in at them. So I really urge you to remember that. We're using guerrilla tactics. And that's a problem with being part of a big organization, because you inevitably reflect the weaknesses of your weakest elements. And that's not the people we need. We need those people on the ground willing to act, who are steeled in this and aren't afraid. And like Georgina and William Coombs, are willing to give up their fear in action, because that's the only way you unlearn it, by taking action. I often say to people, you know, if you base yourself on discussion all the time, like you do in our internet culture, you get 10 people together in a room or online, and you've got 10 different opinions about what's going on. But if you get 10 people together and they do an action together, they go into a church or they do whatever, they have a common experience that they can then talk about. And that gives an incredible basis of unity to say, okay, let's do it different next time. Let's go do this now. It's what you need to do in this day and age rather than be reduced to talk in big organizations or networks online. It doesn't really change anything. So these lessons of how to operate as a guerrilla army, these are really important to remember. And like I say, that section in the book where we talk about the sniper's trait, you keep the enemy off balance. And also, make it personal. That's something we found. We would get up. There was an archbishop called Raymond Roosen who used to make these incredibly criminal remarks about how there was nothing wrong with what we did to Native children. And he almost, and I think as a matter of fact, he quoted on one occasion Thomas Aquinas, one of the early, quote, fathers of the Catholic Church, who said, kill the body to save the soul. And he was literally saying that's what he still believed in. You had to do that with these, quote, savages. So what we did in our publicity, we named Raymond Roosen as, you know, the guy who legitimated killing. And we made it personal with him. And what happened was after a couple of weeks of doing that, he quit. He resigned. The cover story was he had a nervous breakdown, which I don't doubt. But before he departed, they put the whole Catholic Church in Vancouver under trusteeship and brought in a guy, Michael Miller, who's still the Archbishop there, because the guy broke down under our continual exposures of his remarks and what was going on. And just before he left, he made the remark, Catholic faith does not require great intelligence. Like, amen, right? But he did that because he literally broke down under the pressure of a few of us just making it personal and never giving up. Because as we remember, evil has an address and a name. It's not genocide in the abstract. These are human beings who did and are doing these crimes, and we name them. And when you name them and name their address, they run. Because as so-called rulers or the people in charge are essentially cowards. That's why they need all the protection of courts and money and power. Because as individuals, they are cowards. Their main concern is being sued, losing their insurance coverage. And that's another tactic we did. We went to the insurance companies, and this is something another tactic you should do. Find out who are the insurance providers to the Catholic Church in your community and go to them and say, you know, you are financially underwriting and protecting and insuring a genocidal body that's been found guilty under international law. It's a transnational criminal organization. The Catholic Church launders money for the mafia. It traffics human beings. It's got a history of genocide. It's got a policy to protect child rapists. So you are part and parcel. You're an accessory to a crime. And we did that. And guess what? In Canada, it worked. They announced that they were reconsidering. This was a Great West Life Assurance of Toronto. They said after our pressure, they were reassessing whether or not they should underwrite the Anglican and the Catholic churches. That coincided with, and it was not accidental that soon after that, the government starts announcing apologies to take the heat off the church. So strike where they're weak, their money, their public image. We've proven that time and again. So that's some of the stuff I wanted to share with you today. And we're going to be next week, it'll be right after the first opening actions of Aboriginal Holocaust Remembrance Day celebration, that anniversary. And it's a great source of joy and hope for me to have lasted this long, to be one of the survivors of that movement, because we've got to revive the memory of it. These changes didn't happen because the government and the churches suddenly became nice guys. Hardly. Their leopard never changes its spots, bloody spots. It happened because a few of us pressured them and made it happen. And at the cost of seven of our people, seven of our Indigenous brothers and sisters were killed. William Coombs was the most notable example, but it happened with others in Vancouver, like Bingo Dawson, beaten to death by the Vancouver police. Death record says it was tubercular meningitis, even though he had no symptoms of that. So, I mean, you know, there's a price to pay, but the more of us who stand together, the safer it is for all of us. And we will be out there next week and beyond. And we hope to see all of you with us. Write to Republic National Council at protonmail.com, murderbydecree.com, and republicofkanata.org. And there'll be a lot more next week. And in fact, I hope to have convinced Georgina to come on to talk about her exploits down in Australia and Owen and others who were involved in these actions all over the world. And we're going to be going out on a good song. It's called Bella Ciao. And Bella Ciao was a song of the Italian resistance, appropriately enough, in Italy, where the Vatican lined up with Hitler and the fascists. And the Bella Ciao is really appropriate because it's really a song of youth saying, I'm heading out. You may never see me again, but we're a rising movement that'll never be crushed because we have the people and history on our side. So I want to thank you all. This is Kevin Andit, Eagle Strong Voice, signing off. I'll be back again live next week. Stay strong, stay clear, and become clear and become strong. Thank you.
Or on the